From the Atlantic to the Pacific, from mountain crest to mountain crest, from canyons to the clouds and into the cosmos, we are pumping wattage high and low, plus streaming worldwide on the internet and keeping you company tonight. It's the place to relax and hang out. I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren, and this is Speaking of Strange, giving you the latest and discussing the weirdest. We have assembled the finest team of reporters and the most intriguing guests, and that's why we are your favorite hub in a wild world. So keep it tuned right here. What a program we have for you tonight. You've heard me talk many times about the fascination with the ovulus and the iovulus application. I mean, it doesn't matter if we are doing an investigation in Transylvania at the ruins of the Poenari Castle, or just recently I was doing an investigation here in Asheville at the Zealandia Castle. People break out the iovulus and they have these remarkable experiences. It's startling how fitting some of the comments, if you will, some of the words that are given by the iovulus are to the situation. It almost seems like you're talking to the other side. And everybody keeps asking me, how does it work? How does it work? I don't know. I do know there is a long history of people trying to use electronic means to experimentally communicate with other realms. But the iovulus is just incredibly popular right now. And so for a long time, I've wanted to talk to the man who created this device, get his input. And it's not easy to get him for an interview. He's a very busy man, and so it's a great honor for us to have him with us tonight. You can go to his website, digitaldowsing.com, and, of course, that will be linked up also on our website, digitaldowsing.com, to learn more about the plethora of products that he offers. So it's a great honor to say, Bill Chappell, welcome, sir, to Speaking of Strange.
Well, thank you, Joshua. It's good to be on with you.
You know, you are, at this point, the sort of mysterious mad scientist figure in the background who has created something that everybody's buzzing about. So, Bill, I guess just for basics here, how did this start for you? What made you decide, I want to experiment with this kind of technology?
Oh, you know, it's just like everybody else. You woke up one morning and said, you know, I just want to talk to dead people. No, it really didn't work that way. I semi-retired in 2000 and kind of hanging around the house for a few years. My wife was getting tired of me hanging around and suggested I go do something, and went to a paranormal convention out in Las Vegas. We have a condo out there. And people were using dowsing rods and misusing EMF meters, and it was just kind of an interesting time. And I kind of got hooked on it then, and I decided I'd start building an electronic dowsing. I wanted to start by getting human out of the equation because I was kind of tickled with watching people use them because, see, it's moving. Well, yeah, and it's sitting in your wrist, and you move your wrist even the slightest amount, and it's going to rotate. So I started with that. One thing led to another. I started building a couple other devices. Then I got approached about had I ever seen a Frank's box and could I build an ITC device. And I gave it a try. Now, really, I thought it was kind of like a joke. I thought, you know, this is going to be interesting. It's going to be cute. It's going to say a couple things, and, you know, it'll be funny. But the joke was really on me. The first time I ever used it was in Waverly. And, you know, the results were had me so upset I didn't know which way to go with it. And from that point, I wrestled with the what's now the ovulus for probably about a good 11 months before I actually timidly started coming out with the product and let people start playing with it. In a nutshell, that's kind of how I got there.
So what does the word ovulus mean?
Well, ovulus is a Greek derivative. It means the great one.
Okay. Wow. So right from the beginning, you had some pretty grand expectations for what this thing could do.
Know, actually, the original case had like an octagon interior pattern to it, and so that kind of started me on a hunt for a name that would be appropriate, and that's what I found. And, you know, at first people made fun of the name, and at one point in time when we came out with the second version of the obelisk, I actually named it TX because I got so tired of all the derivatives of obelisk that I was hearing everywhere, and then by that time it had gotten so ingrained in me let's say, the urban mystique. I went back to Obelisk when we did the next upgrade of the Jax.
Well, you know, one thing that I really love about your approach is that you are a true scientist, a true technician, and you have told me in email correspondence that you're not a person who believes that there is some spiritual realm that you're trying to tap into. This is more of an experimental technology for you, right?
Yeah, it really is. I think one of the biggest problems I've got, people all the time, you know, people that really know me will say, well, Bill's a skeptic. And very much so. And I'm not the kind of skeptic we run into on the internet all the time. That's the first time they hear something they don't like. They say, no, you're wrong. I'm right. I'm not that type of skeptic. But as far as do I believe it's a ghost or do I believe it's your dead end, and I really don't go down that road. I think it's truly something else. I'm not saying these things don't happen. That's not my point. But I think the origin of it and the background of it is probably something completely different than where we're going mainstream is what people are looking at.
So now, when you, with your background, decided you wanted to sit down and create something that might come across as an interface, what was step one? How did you even try to get a handle on this? I mean, what did you create?
Well, you know, there's no book. There's no, nothing you can look up and say, all right, let's, you know, how do we talk to the dead, step one, step two, step three?
Yeah.
You know, you kind of look at the things that have been done and say, okay, if I was going to try this, where would you attempt it? You know, I think the classical thought pattern for most of this is that, you know, it's occurring in the EM spectrum, and to some degree, I'll go along with that, and to some degree, I'll disagree. It's not what's happening, but that's where you start. You start with an input and a feed. The idea was fairly simple with the Obelisk and then Paranormal Puck were the two devices that were really generated at the same time. Basically, it was take a value or a reference or an input. In other words, like in the Obelisk, you have the original Obelisk had two antennas. The PX had three, and the current version of Obelisk has four, actually. But you have these four derived inputs, and you sum them together so you get a value. In other words, it's sitting there, and it sees a certain amount of EMF, it sees a certain amount of static electricity, and it comes up with a value of, let's say, 115, and it says the word Apple. Now, every time it comes up with that value, whether it's a combination of EMF or static electricity or capacitive field, doesn't matter. The same sum value on the device triggers the same word every time. So the idea was really simple. Is if you could imagine, if something was capable of doing this kind of communications, it would simply be able to generate a certain amount of energy, and that energy would say the word, and it would be a learning process where, you know, fairly soon, it's like if I put this much energy into this device, it will say, well, I put this much energy in, and it'll say, go away, or whatever. But that was the idea. You know, I've had a lot of people say that there should be a protocol, but to develop a protocol means you have to have that two-way communications and an understanding of what that protocol is going to be. So there really, that would be a step that would be the next generation. But until we get probably, you know, an absolute clarification of what we're dealing with and how we're dealing with it, it's really not practical at this point.
So, all right, for those who are not technically inclined,
okay,
what exactly does this circuit electronically do? How does it interface with the environment?
Okay. Well, it reads it. In other words, you have four channels of input, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So, and these inputs can be an electrostatic field, a capacitive field, EMF, just static electricity. So, basically, it takes any one of those four values and it derives a total, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So it's like if you look in your wallet and say, okay, I got four ones and four quarters. Add them together, you have five. Same type of idea here. So we take these four inputs, we add them together, and it gives us the total, and total sum energy that's hitting the device. And from that point, it's strictly just a reference of one-to-one. We created an internal dictionary, and it just routes the word based on the input. So, like I say, if the word is, the value is 100, it might say Apple, and tomorrow if the value is 100, it's still going to say Apple. It doesn't matter how the inputs differ, so long as the total from the inputs is 100, it's always going to say that same word. So the the idea was really simple. We have a known amount of energy, and we get a known word out. I think that's probably the simplest way to put it.
Yeah, see, that makes complete sense to me, and I understand how that if you have, say, the original ovulus, which is a device that you created, that works very nicely. How do you adapt that to the common cell phone, however?
Well, you know, still wrestling with the Android phone. The problem right now on the Android side is there's too many phones, too many derivations. With the iPhone, I think spent about 11 months developing it. And if, for anybody that's actually worked on the iPhone, Apple kind of locks down quite a bit of the internal workings and limits what you can get to as far as sub-level software. So it was really a challenge. It took a long time to develop enough things between the GSM circuit and the antenna and things like that to drive, you know, the right inputs to be able to give it the same type of channel configuration as the original Ovilus. Then the later versions, we got the 3GS, and of course, we started getting the magnetometers in. We got even more functionality with the newer version. But really, it was just a matter of taking a look at what was available on the circuit. That kind of gets to an understanding of what I think ITC works like. But, you know, to make a long story short, we just derived the closest derivation we could to the original hardware in the phone.
So you took, say, an iPhone. You broke it down technically into parts and components, figured out what parts would be receptive to what type of energy, and then adapted your software to make sure that it could interpret the way the components of an iPhone would pick up those fields?
Well, basically, yes. Once I was able to come up with, you know, the input channels and get a, you know, an actual input into the device, then it was fairly simple. Then the, you know, the actual algorithms sum those things together and then just putting out the value was fairly simple. But it's that first step that it took, like I say, about 11 months to get worked out.
Yeah. Okay, we're up on our first break here, and this is fascinating. And in fact, folks, when we come back from this break, we'll continue talking to Bill about sort of how he adapted a cell phone to be this receptive, and also what he thinks about some of these words that pop up that, from my understanding, are not supposed to pop up, that were not put in the dictionary. He is the creator of the Ovilus and, of course, the very popular iOvilus application. His website is digitaldowsing.com. And go check it out. See why this is so popular and mind-blowing for many people. I'm Joshua P. Warren. You're listening to Speaking of Strange. Hey, thanks for spending your evening with us. It's the program where the unusual becomes usual. It's called Speaking of Strange. And I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren, talking with Bill Chappell, the man who created the Ovilus And, of course, the iOvulus application, his website is digitaldowsing.com. So let's say I go out here and I do an investigation, and just to kind of like help everybody understand maybe a little bit what I think is happening here, and I've got a bunch of different meters. I have a meter that picks up a certain electromagnetic frequency. I have a meter that picks up a certain scale of electrostatic fields, etc., and I wire them all together. So the reading that one gets is represented by a numeric value. And so each one of these things are constantly popping up numbers for what they're reading. All the numbers are combined into an ultimate number, and that number references a word in your pre-programmed dictionary. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay. So that said, we would think, of course, well, I guess there are two things here. Number one, getting back to the way these cell phones are designed, so have you found that cell phones have got pretty, I mean, I'm sure they're not ideal, but appropriate components to accurately measure all these different fields that you had in the original ovulus?
Well, I tell you what, you have a much more sophisticated magnetometer in a cell phone than we do even in the current ovulus. Also, you know, the way the GSM circuit's going, you have some opposing field references you can get from that. You've got a capacitive touch screen that's incredibly sensitive. I think, you know, it's like a 32-bit output. You know, you're talking about basically in today's smartphones, a handheld computer that rivals anything that was on your desktop 2 or 3 years ago. And, you know, way more sophisticated from an electronic standpoint than what I'm capable of building in the present-day ovulus. You know, I'm a small manufacturing shop, and it's just not possible for us to compete with the resources that Apple or Samsung or, you know, these other companies have. So from an electronic standpoint, I would put the phones as superior. In fact, a lot of times I've been talking to people, and I talk a lot about the fact that I think if you're into ghost hunting, and probably a smartphone is one of the best tools to use out there because you have everything at your fingertips plus connectivity at the same time.
And so when the phone is being used for this purpose, at any point, does it connect with the Internet or GPS data?
No.
Okay. So in that case, there's no way that it's going to be gathering information from the net to influence the result.
Nope, that's absolutely correct. And for anybody that questions that, if they've ever used an app, they'll get what's called a push notification or they'll get a privacy notification, and you have to accept those or you have to agree to them in the setup, and you'll find neither is present in the iOvulus.
So now, here's where things get weird. I can understand how if there's a dictionary there, that if there is, I mean, just hypothetically speaking, if there is some type of an entity that can manipulate electromagnetic and electrostatic fields, by trial and error, it might figure out from its own feedback what types of things to produce to connect to a certain word. What happens when words pop up that were not programmed into your dictionary?
Well, as far as from a text standpoint, I have never seen that occur on the iOvulus.
Oh, okay.
Because of the way it's derived. Now, from a word standpoint, we do what we call compounding. And this is true of hardware ovulus and the iOvulus. So when the ovulus starts a word, it has the ability to stop in the middle of that word and start another one. So it can concatenate and put two words together. Mm-hmm. And thus, you know, it can actually string more than two words. I think probably about six is the max I've ever seen done. But it can actually group them together and put, you know, create new words in that fashion.
So now, I'm sure Dave Schrader, a friend of ours, of course, for everybody's listening, darknessradio.com. Dave probably told you when we were in Transylvania, we were at Poenari, where this mistress of Vlad supposedly jumped to her death. Her name was Ilona, and somebody's iOvulus produced the name, or, well, the word, we'll say, Ilona. Is that in your dictionary?
You know, people always ask me dictionary questions, and I wrote the original ovulus dictionaries probably 4 or 5 years ago, and I mean on ones that are more than 1,000 words, and the primary dictionary over 7 years ago, so I don't remember every word that's in it. For anybody that wants to know, go to the website, go find the iObelisk icon, and on that page, just below the references about the iObelisk, you'll find a PDF that has every word that's in the iObelisk listed.
You see, I looked at that, and I did not see Ilona in there.
Okay.
So
what I ask is, I think I asked Dave the same thing, could we get a copy of the blog file from the iObelisk?
Oh, sure, yeah. I know the lady, and Dave does as well, who got it. So we should send that to you for analysis then.
Oh, right? Absolutely. I would love to see it.
But you personally have never actually seen anything like that happen?
I've witnessed the iObelisk compound things, but I've never seen anything in text. And I wrote code, so I know that compounding isn't part of the text function. So that would very much surprise me.
You know, recently I was doing an investigation, and there was a woman who was trying to connect with what she felt were the spirits of children who had been playing games in the 1800s, and she said something like, "Oh, were you guys playing games in this room?" And the iObelisk said, "Competition, eggs, and grain." And it was weird it said competition. And so she said, "Well, were you carrying eggs around in a spoon?" And the iObelisk said, "Fork." And I was standing right there. I mean, that like sent a chill down my spine. And I know you hear these kinds of stories all the time. How do you make sense of this? What is your explanation?
All right, we have to get into a gray area there. I think you have to decide what is actually manipulating the device. That's the biggest trick. For me, I put more stock in the fact that we are somehow on an unconscious level manipulating the device more than I would say it would be a dead or deceased person.
Right.
So, that's kind of hard. And like I said, I've had several talks with friends of mine. I've got a very good friend that's a theoretical physicist, and he starts talking about the fact of we have to decide whether or not the device actually changes or our perception of reality changes. You know, what is actually being manipulated? So, it's a hard question. I wish I had that primary answer. I've seen examples of it thousands of times. My most classic thing I get with the iObelisk and the obelisk both. People will walk into a room and they say, I'll set this thing down, and it starts describing everything that's in the room.
Yeah.
Events that are going on, people, chair, desk, table, lamp, whatever's going on. And I've heard it so much now, it's just really commonplace for me. But as far as to be able to tell you the mechanism that makes that possible, I can speculate, but I have no answers.
Yeah, I mean, it really starts getting into, quantum and subconscious levels of questioning, like you said, about how we ourselves are affecting the environment. And, of course, we're being selective in terms of, what we pay attention to. We're a couple minutes from our next break, but let me just ask you quickly, what do you think about, like, Ghost Radar and some of these other programs? Are they similar in how they work, or do you know?
I honestly don't. Truthfully, I don't take this the wrong way. I don't pay any attention to them. I just don't have time. But, I think it gets down to ITC. And let me put it this way. I think anybody that's ever played with it, I think the whole name, instrumental transcommunication is a misnomer. Anybody that's ever played with ITC and understands the heart of it truly will tell you that the instrument doesn't make a difference. If the intent is there, it will work. And that's what I'll say, across the board. I think if the user has the intent for it to work, I think they'll find that it does work. And I'm not saying it's just with iPhones or anything I've made. We've seen this people using reflective water pools, light sources, sound sources, spoons, knives, forks. I think you could do it with, cotton candy if you had an inclination with ITC. And that was the problematic thing for me as an engineer. I don't like about the whole thing is I wanted to remove the human from the equation when I first started out with this to say, okay, let's separate part A from part B, and then we'll really have a better understanding of what's happening. But through the course of time, I've understood that part A, the human, is the whole equation. And without the human, nothing really occurs.
You know, I'm loving this. I see exactly what you're talking about. You know, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue talking about this profound effect and what it could mean. Also, I'm going to bring Mr. Mobius in here, and you know, we'll just continue figuring out as much as possible about this incredible device, the iOvulus. I'm Joshua P. Warren. You're listening to Speaking of Strange. Speaking of Strange, the show where the unusual becomes usual, broadcasting from Asheville, North Carolina, land of the sky. And, gosh, you know, this is one of the most fascinating conversations I've had in a long time on this program with the man who created the iOvulus. His name is Bill Chappell. His website is digitaldowsing.com, digitaldowsing.com. And, of course, you know, I've been involved in professional paranormal investigation for about 20 years. People are always asking me to explain things. You know, how does this work? How does that work? And I'm always doing my best to try to break things down and give them some understanding. So, Bill, when it comes to scientific verification, obviously, you know, you have a product here that is proprietary, as it should be. You've worked hard. Mm-hmm. You've put this together. But for those who are involved in scientific research, how much can you release about the programming and exactly how this works so that somebody can analyze their results properly?
Well, we had a much more complete version of this out for several years called Paranormal Puck, which ran on a PC, and it created data logs as it went along. It showed you every channel, what the values were on the channel, what the words were that were picked, every actual computation that was going on. Truthfully, I'm going to tell you straight up, very few people ever used the product, even less ever looked at the logs. So as far as, you know, putting out more data about the obelisk at this point, we're not going to, but the Paranormal Puck is still out there, the software is still out there, and anybody that's really into the scientific side and really wants to play with this, that's the device I would recommend they look for.
Okay, fair enough. Okay, all of you listening, you know Mr. Mobius, friend of mine, partner in terms of all kinds of, you know, technical devices and investigation tools. Mr. Mobius, are you with us, sir?
I am here.
Okay, great. You've been listening to the interview. You're a very technically minded scientific guy. Say hi to Bill and tell us what questions you have.
It's extremely nice to meet you. So hello from Mobius.
Oh, hello, sir.
I guess one question I will ask, watching the net, apparently everybody hopes that you're able to make an Android version of this. I certainly heard your explanation that the sensors and everything are not as standardized and many things are running Android. But do you think there's a possibility that you can adapt this at some point to an Android?
Oh, I've got a version running right now. We just haven't released it. The problem gets down to, here's the issue. Apple makes four versions of the same phone, all running the same iOS, all using the same screen layout, all using the same proportional filters, on and on and on. When you jump into the Android market, you know, there's been such an explosion in that market. You have hundreds of phones and hundreds of manufacturers, hundreds of screen resolutions. And the problem is it isn't getting it running. We've got one running that runs on, like, the ITCs, I mean, on the and the Razer phone just fine. But it's getting it to jump across to the tablets and all the other derivations of the phone. The biggest problem really right now is getting the screen resolutions squared away. The actual workings of the device really aren't an issue. But you have to understand that from a programming standpoint, I don't have the time or the resources to put the, probably at this point where I'm at, another couple hundred hours into finalizing a version at this point. So sometime I'll get it done. It's just, right now with digital dowsing, I probably work, 12, 14 hours a day, typically 6 to 7 days a week. So I don't get a lot of spare time to program these days.
Okay, I sat while you and Josh were talking, and I've looked at all the sensors in the iPhone, and I have a reasonably good idea what is going on here. Essentially, with this data, it's almost a random event generator, and I kind of understand the idea. No?
There's no random event generator. No.
So
never has been, never will be.
I was looking at the data is creating from the data just a random number, but not necessarily just made up number. The actual data creates the equivalent of a number.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I'm having a hard time hearing the last part.
It creates the equivalent of a number of the combined sensor data is the way I read it.
Right, yeah, exactly. Everything that's coming in, it basically is combined into a number that references his dictionary.
Okay, I understand the reason that this seems to be so accurate. You guys seem to nail something that I agreed with, and that was the observer effect. I have this bizarre feeling. If you took somebody who was a total skeptic and handed them this device, told them to walk in a room, it might sit there and just simply state random data, whereas maybe somebody who totally believed in the device and had some invisible connection would get...
I probably would do that sometimes. Sometimes it won't.
Okay.
You've got to understand, do I put wholeheartedly a belief in the paranormal? No, I don't, and I've stated that about 1,000 times. When it comes to this device and what I've seen with ITC, the first criteria I've got for these type of things, you can't take everything the device says literally and say, oh, that's a spirit or that's an entity or that's a communication. You have to be looking for a criteria. First of all, if you're asking questions, those responses have to be immediate and have to be contextual. Let me give you a really good example. One of the first times I was using the device, the paranormal puck. We were out. We had 6 of them set up in Waverly Hills to let people play with at a large event. And I had a lady that started break down crying, and she was just shaking and visibly upset. We started talking to her, and I said, what's wrong? She said, it's my grandmother. And I said, was your grandmother here at Waverly? And she said, no, she wasn't here at Waverly. I said, well, how is it your grandmother? And we're looking, because on the paranormal puck, you have the entire log and the conversation and the words were said and the timing. And she says, well, I asked if there was anyone here with me, and it said tennis shoes. And I said, okay. And I can't remember what the second word was. And then something else. And she said, it said cookies. And went on to one other thing. And she said, my grandmother used to wear tennis shoes, and she used to bake cookies. And I'm like, no. It has to be contextual. And I agree with you. I think people do take these way too far. They take any ITC type of thing too far. They try to bend it to make it communications. And that's not the right premise here. You've got to look at this, and you've got to look at what was said, what's being done. And those type of things have to be immediate, they have to be accurate, and they have to be, a type of response that is not ambiguous.
Right.
I completely understand what you're saying, and I agree with you for the most part. I think you can find that with just about anything anybody plays with this field. I think if you look at the type of disclaimer I put on the device, I tell people chances are better than not, you're kidding yourself. because you really need to be looking at the data and you need to be understanding what's being said. If the device, you know, if you walk into a room and the thing says, you know, door, chair, bed, you know, that type of thing, and you walked into a bedroom, it's pretty interesting. You know, if you walked into a living room and it said those same things, not so interesting. You know, it's the type of thing. It has to be immediate. It has to be contextual. It has to be accurate.
Basically, that is what Joshua is reporting that he's observed. Now, I'm sure that a skeptic would say that possibly there were hundreds of other people who are not reporting anything because, like you said, they walked into a bedroom and it said, you know, three words that had no relation to the environment. I would suggest here also in play the observer effect, where people have the tendency when they observe something to cause it to change. And theoretically, as Joshua said, there is a quantum physics element. And I'd like to post the double split experiment along with this interview on the site and give people the idea that it's a possible human consciousness element that could be at work. Again, I would like to hear the most negative experiences where the device makes no sense, and I would like to hear people who report that they have nailed it in, especially the idea that the device is something not in the dictionary.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's see. Well, we got about a minute here before our next break. So I guess the cause and effect is always going to be the big question here, right, Bill? I mean, what is it?
Absolutely.
That, yeah, I mean, and that's a really more of a philosophical and psychological question than a physics question, isn't it?
Well, physics gets hard to play in here. I mean, everybody wants to play the quantum physics card, but, you know, at the end of the day, we have to understand that, you know, quantum physics, string theory, super string theory, they're all theory. And, you know, we're playing with a mathematical set of equations that when we plug in X, they seem to come out true, and therefore we hold them as an example of a possibility. But, I really don't like to play in the physics realm when we talk about these type of things, but, you know, something's at work here.
Yeah.
Whether it's just our consciousness playing with us, I don't know. But, like I say, I've been doing this for a long time, and, I've seen some of the craziest things you can imagine come out of these devices, and I've seen some of the most mundane things. I mean, people will send me, you know, like I said, here's what it said, okay? I have no idea what I put together with alcohol, cookies, and, you know, liar. I mean, the words have no meaning to me. Do they have any meaning to you? I mean, it's that type of thing. People need, when you're playing with ICC, you have to be diligent in what you're doing.
Yeah.
You know, you have to set up a set of standards that make sense to you and a set of parameters that would make sense as far as whether the response is no, you're not.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll wrap up our conversation with Bill Chappell. Where does he see the future of all this going? He's the creator of the iOvulus. His website is digitaldowsing.com. I'm Joshua P. Warren. You're listening to the program where the unusual becomes usual. It's called Speaking of Strange. Of hour number two on tonight's Speaking of Strange. I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren. Stick around for next hour. We call it the Dark 30 Hour. That's when we dig into some of the more outrageous and controversial news, not for the kiddies, not for the easily offended. Mr. Mobius, can you stick around for the Dark 30 hour tonight?
I wouldn't miss it.
Okay, great. And so I'm talking right now with Bill Chappell, the man who created the ovulus, the eye ovulus, and it's just, it's exploding in popularity. It's a remarkable device. And, Bill, let me ask you here in the final minutes, if you take, because I have an Android, so unfortunately, you know, I haven't been able to play with the eye ovulus myself, but if you take the, let's say your iPhone, and you just take a piece of PVC pipe and you stroke it on some wool and you build up a nice electrostatic charge and start waving it around the phone, does the eye ovulus begin spitting out words? Have you done something?
Oh, yeah, sure.
So is there...
So in an ovulus, so in an EMF meter.
Right, yeah. So, and so that would just be, that'd be like truly random stuff coming out, which could be...
Right, and you would be forcing it to happen, but yes.
Yeah, so that would be more of a like a random experiment, and so when people are walking around in an environment, how powerful would you say like an electrostatic field would have to be, maybe an inch away from the phone in order to create a reaction?
You know, I honestly don't know. I've never sat down to actually calculate it for the iPhone like that. But, you know, let's take it for any type of a field like that. Normal, like if you're walking across a room and able to get a static discharge or make your hair stand up, any of those type of events would trigger that device.
Right. So since we only have a few minutes left here, what's the next step? Let's say, you know, you got $1 billion and, you know, you were told, Bill Chappell, you're the genius who created the eye ovulus. Make us the best device you can imagine. What would you create with that $1 billion?
I'd create a beach house.
Now we're talking.
Yeah, there we go. You know, I really don't know. I get asked this quite a bit. I think for me it's such a change as to what's really going on. I think we're a ways away before we can really talk about what the next generation is. I don't think we have the physics, nor do we have the physical understanding of, you know, particle relationships to the EM field to really get our heads around this yet. And I think that's, you know, I'm starting from my own point as an engineer. You know, I have no way of measuring, you know, inaccurately gravitational particles or that type of thing. You know, and then we're talking about interactions that we truly just don't have an understanding for. And I think that until somebody comes up with new types of technology, new types of sensors, new types of sensing equipment, we're going to be at a stymate for a while.
So aside from going to digitaldowsing.com, any other suggestions for listeners who want to learn more about you and your work?
You know, I hang out on my website. That's about it.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like you're a very busy guy. You don't have much time to spare, and that makes it even more impressive that you know you can take time to be with us tonight.
I don't know what time it is here in Colorado, but we're still here working at the shop, so
yeah.
That gives you an idea.
Yeah. Well, you know, I hopefully, you know, we'll get more versions of this thing out when you have more time, Android and whatnot. But definitely, you know, I have seen enough to convince me that there is something noteworthy happening with your device, and that does not happen very often in this field. And I like the approach that you've taken, and you know the fact that you know you don't yourself make any bold claims about what's happening, but you're doing a pretty good job of explaining how it works. And I'll look into the Paranormal Puck, and so Paranormal Puck is going to give the best access to, like you said, technical understanding of precisely how this thing is designed, right?
When I did the Puck has essentially the same electronics, USB to a PC, and it streams all the data out and puts all the data in a CSV, which is an Excel type text file. So, you know, you could assemble an Excel spreadsheet and look at everything. And that was the idea. The idea was really from a scientific standpoint at first, sit down, do your investigation, and then crunch your data. I will tell you, honestly, over the last 7 years, the one failing I'm getting for the paranormal field is really is the lack of data gathering. You know, people don't truly seem that interested in taking the time to get the data, compile the data, and then go back and crunch the numbers and say, did we really see something, or was it statistically just, you know, a small area?
Yeah. Well, hey, you know, great job. We're going to be following your work, and I'll send you the logs that have, you know, at least the one that had Ilona there.
Okay. I'd like to see it, and like I said, I'd have to go back and look on the list, but I can't imagine if that would be in there.
Yeah, it was pretty bizarre. I mean, everybody was freaking out, and, you know, we were in an intense scenario to begin with, so that was even better. Bill, I can't thank you enough for being on the program tonight. Congratulations on your success, and all my best to you, sir.
Well, thank you very much, and you gentlemen have a good evening.
All right, folks, that was Bill Chappell, the guy who created the ovulus, the iOvulus. His website, again, is digitaldowsing.com. Go check it out. There's a link also at speakingofstrange.com for your convenience. When we come back, it'll be the dark 30 hour, and yes, the world is just going nuts. I'm Joshua P. Warren. It's the program where the unusual becomes usual. We dig into the amazing, the remarkable, the extraordinary, and yes, the downright weird. Don't touch that dial.